Patrick, mettila in mezzo Patrick, palla nostra, Suso, tira Alessio, Suso, tira, perché non tiriamo? Ma perché non tiriamo? Gol! Alessio Romagnoli! Il gol del capitano ancora l'ultimo, come Gilardino, detto ieri in conferenza.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Sempre Milan podcast. I'm your host, Ollie Fisher. You can find me on Twitter at Ollie Fisher, joined once again by the loyal Anthony Talkrude.
Ever faithful, I'm here every day. Tired as can be, had a wedding to go to last night and didn't get into it. This is my dedication. I watched Sunday's game at 4 o'clock in the morning today so that I would be up to date and could discuss it tonight with you. So follow me on Twitter. I deserve it. at Talkrude45. And yeah, no Madison. So, but you got something special you want to show us?
I do. Yeah, I do. I said last week, I can't remember if I mentioned it, that I'd ordered the 120th anniversary jersey, and it came in the post on Thursday, and I've held off opening it because I wanted to do like a proper unboxing. I thought if I get the box out and show everyone, and you know, get the shirt out and look at it, I wouldn't be able to put it back in to do like another unboxing for this. So I thought, well, there you go. Came in a big, big box, which is a good sign. But it comes with this cool, like, I won't even try and read what it says, but cool, like, I don't know, Italian ribboning on it. So let's dive in. I may need scissors for this, so we'll find out in a second. But this is cool.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Like, you can see the, before I've even peeled it off, it's got like a red and black patterning on it. And I can see a little, I'm going to pull this out now.
Is it a metal box, or what is the material on it?
It feels like it's a plastic box. It's a plastic box. This is just a return form, if there's an error with it. So I thought it was going to be like a handwritten letter from Paolo Maldini or something. Like, thanks for sticking with us, even though we've been shit for years. No problem, Paolo. £120. This cost me about £180. So it better be worth it. So that's cool. You may be able to pick that up. It's just faint Milan logo. And then that's got like the 120 thing there. So that's a nice presentation.
So for those who aren't watching, they're just listening along. It's the 120 anniversary t-shirt, and it's obviously in a box. It's got red and black stripes and the gold logo. It looks really nice so far.
What I'll probably do is I'll upload some pictures at various stages. I might actually take them now while I remember. On at Kilpin Chronicle, which is the Milan only like Twitter account that I do, where a lot of the stuff's explicit, etc. A bit less professional, but whatever. So I'll upload some pictures so those of you who are only listening along can see exactly how it looks at the various stages. But yeah, we've got the box at the moment there, red and black stripes, nice gold badge, which is what I expected. It just seems to be a gold theme. Okay, so we're in here. It's got a nice tissue wrapping there with the Milan logo on in gold again with the 120 thing. I can see the tag popping out. I'm going to try and take pictures as I go here. You have to bear with me. So you unravel this. Ooh, that looks nice. Ta-da! Wow. Oh, no, it's falling.
Oh, you've already dropped it. Ollie has ruined the shirt.
Okay, so it's on like a cardboard base thing, which is kind of cool. And then here it is. So as expected, yeah. It's the shirt with the gold version of the badge with 120 underneath. Emirates sponsorship on, Fly Better. It's a large, and I've already got the large version of this year's home shirt, so I know it's going to fit fine. I don't know if you can pick this up on the camera. Probably not, but the gold is like sparkly gold. It's almost
glittery. I can't tell. But
no, it looks just
is
like
the is the quotes in each and every single stripe, or is it just in some?
Right, this is weird. There are no quotes in the stripes.
What?
I thought
they advertised that.
I know. Do you think it was a Photoshop? Because there are actually no quotes running down the stripes. It's just plain red and black stripes.
Well, that's interesting.
I wonder if there's... So they're in a specific place. Again, because of the lighting, etc., you may not be able to pick this up. But
Yeah, I can't see anything.
Yeah. But they're there. It's obviously the quote. It's, we're going to be a team of devils. Our colours will be red like flames and black like our opponent's fear. Herbert Kilpin. So that's cool. It's just in a... They don't run all the way up, but they're in the bottom corner down by the dry fit tag there. And then on the other side, it's got what the edition of the shirt is. So...
Again, oh, okay, that's cool.
Pretty bad, but you can
see...
You
got 888? That's kind of cool.
Yeah. Out of 1899. So, yeah, there was a 1,011 after me. So that's pretty cool. So I'm happy with that.
Yeah, I wonder who got number one.
I wonder if the number one shirt will have gone to, like, a I don't know, someone at the club or...
Probably like Gazetas or...
Or it might be in a museum or something like that.
Yeah, that makes more sense. It's probably Casa Milan.
Yeah, Gazetas will have got it and not had to pay a penny, but I've just had to fork out 180 quid for this. It's nice, though. If it funds the Ibra move, then we're happy days, aren't we? So that's that done.
Yeah, that's a good transition because there's some new developments on Ibra, isn't there?
There is.
Yeah.
I am once again... Just looking inside this box to make sure I didn't miss anything. There's a card. No. So, I mean, basically on the Puma store, I think I mentioned this, the Puma store, sorry, you could buy this for £95, which is equivalent of around about 110 euros, something like that. This was all 18990, basically 190 euros from the official Milan store. And the difference being that it comes with this box. And I thought there might be some other stuff in it to add the other £70 of value, but sadly not. So, tiny bit disappointed with that, but, you know,
so
I've got
it. Is that box worth the extra money, you think, or no?
Only if you keep the shirt in it. Otherwise, it's just an empty box, you know?
Right.
I'll be honest as well, I don't know how much I'm going to actually wear the shirt, because I'm always scared when you spend that much money on a shirt, like... If you got a match one, one or a side one, you wouldn't want to wear it in case you messed something up. Or,
right, yeah.
You know, it clicked in, you know, and then you've got to wash it. And if you wash it, then anything can happen. So I might keep it in the box. Might try and display it or something. I haven't really decided what to do with it yet, but yeah. New Ibra developments. So it looks like it's us or Napoli at the moment.
They've said they're out of the race, right?
Yeah, he said he's made another choice. Did Walter Sabatini, who's their sporting director, of course, was at Roma. And so it appears to just be us and Napoli. Apparently, Napoli, the latest is that they've offered him an 18-month deal, which is what he's holding out for. That makes me slightly pessimistic. But then also on the flip side, Bwin, who are one of like the leading European bookmakers, have suspended betting. Means you can no longer place any bets on Ibrahimovic's next team. Bookmakers, for those who don't know, tend to do that when they think an announcement's imminent on something, or they've had a really good tip-off that something's about to happen. And this afternoon, just before they closed the betting, Milan were basically even money. So if you put on a dollar, a pound, a euro, and he came to Milan, you'd get two back, you know, one plus your stake. Whereas Napoli were 10 times that. So in theory, they were 10 times less likely to sign Ibra, as the market said, when they closed it. So that, in theory, is a good sign. But there's still people who are being very pessimistic about it and saying that they think that Napoli have managed to nick in there and seal his signature by offering him the length of the deal that he wanted. I really don't know. I still wouldn't rule out a twist in this. There was something from La Repubblica, who are not the most reliable, but they made it clear that they think that there's an unidentified Premier League team that are in the running. You know, Spurs have been linked because obviously he knows Mourinho. Manchester United have been linked because they could do with a striker. They haven't really replaced Lukaku. But it could be anyone. It could be like an Arsenal. It could be a wild card in there that have managed to do this all under wraps. So I'm not really sure. What's your gut feeling about it at the moment? You think it's going to happen?
Even up to this moment, I'm not sure what my gut feeling is. You know, it seems like I change every hour. I think it's going to happen, and then I think there's no way it's going to happen. And that's almost just like PTSD since 2015, where every summer he said Oh, I love Milan. I want to return. If they need me, they know where to find me, things like that.
Yeah.
And then he goes to United, and then he goes to LA Galaxy. And then he gave that GQ interview, and it was almost like he was saying, I'm going to Milan. You know, he mentioned Italy's not just a place I enjoy or whatever. He's like, it's a second home. It's like, when you move at my age, you got to think of your family. His wife has said hundreds of times that it's her favorite city in the world. And then he ended that interview with see you soon, Italy. And he also mentioned, obviously, how he's got to go to a team that needs to get back to winning. Well, that's us.
But now, it could also be Napoli.
Exactly. It fits them as well right now. So there's a lot there. The only thing that leads me to believe it's us over them from that interview is Naples is so different than Milan.
Culturally, and yeah.
Culturally, just environmentally. I mean, everything looks so different there. And I don't think he's referring to that when he talks about his home. It's a totally different scenery for him. It's not a place he ever stayed before anyways, you know. So I could see him going to either one because ultimately we know Ibrahimovic is a mercenary. He's going to go where the money is. And if we're only offering him a six-month deal or a 12-month or whatever it is, and Napoli's offering him the same amount or more money for 18 months, I see him taking it because he knows he's on the tail end of his career. He's got maybe 2 years, maybe three left in him, and that's about it. So this is kind of the point where most players get as much money as they possibly can because they know they're on their way out, and there's no retirement fund for footballers. You know, you got to find a new job after that. So I could see going either way, but I do it in my gut. I'm already switching again. I'm going back and forth, but I do think he's going to come to us, man. I think it's going to happen this time. There's just so many things going around. And granted, you know, Sky has made some weird claims lately, but historically, they are extremely reliable. Now, they said some stuff that you and I know is not possible regarding the free agent status of him and playing this Sunday against Sassuolo. Or no, it was supposed to be against Bologna, right? It was supposed to be today that they were claiming.
They were saying that that he could be available for the Bologna game, which makes absolutely zero sense because they reckon that he's going to need at least 2 weeks in training to get back up to match fitness because obviously he's not played since the Galaxy were knocked out of the MLS playoffs. So
yeah, so I mean, even if we did announce him, he's not playing until the new year. Regardless, it'd be nice if he could start early, but I don't foresee that happening. But I do think an announcement's going to be coming either this week or next. I don't think it's going to come deep into January. I don't think it's going to come even after the new year. I think within the next week or two, that's when this is going down.
I think you're right in what you say. It changes from day to day because the media, for me, change from day to day what they think is going to happen. And even though we've learned to be sort of skeptical of what certain reports are saying, what certain outlets are saying, you know, when the big guns are coming out and saying that a decision will come this week, that implies that whatever the negotiation is, it's at an advanced stage and he's close to reaching an agreement with that particular club. And then the announcement will subsequently be made. But then also, you know, we trust our guy on this, Vito. If you haven't read the latest exclusive on Ibrahimovic that came out before the Bologna game, then give that a read. It's under the exclusive tab on our website. But he said that Ibrahimovic is basically demanding 10 million a year to come back. So that would be, in theory, 5 million until the end of this season. And then he wants 10 mil for the full year next year. And we're offering 3 mil and 6 mil. So that implies to me that there's a bit of difference between the two. And that doesn't suggest to me that it's the kind of negotiation where we're on the, you know, we're on the final stretch and there's going to be a big unveiling and stuff like that. I don't know.
That makes sense for who he is. And like I just said, trying to get as much money as he possibly can. I mean, asking for 10 mil a year at 38 years old, granted he's a storied, decorated player, but that's a bit high. I would still pay it, but I also could see him accepting a bit of a cut on that. You know, if those are his demands, he's starting high, we're starting low, maybe we're going to find that nice middle ground and it's going to be 8 or 9 million a year, you know, something like that. But I don't think we offer him 10.
You'd hope so. I mean, I think that the big thing for us, the doubts over us offering him the 18 months that he wants. If we offered him 18 months, I think he'd sign there and then. But the doubts that we have over offering him that is purely based on fitness and things like that. You know, he's in theory one bad injury away from getting paid $8 million to sit on the bench for the rest of his to sit on the treatment table for the rest of his contract, because that's the age that he's at. He says that he can go on playing until he's 50, and that's probably correct as long as he doesn't have any bad injuries. For us to take a gamble and say, okay, we'll give you the $10 million a year, so commit to a $15 million contract in total. Yes, it's a big commercial statement, and yes, he would bring the experience, the leadership, the firepower that we've talked about so many times on this podcast before, but it's a big, big risk, and it feels like Elliott management are not in the mood for taking risks like that, and that's what worries me. So I think if anything, it would have to be a compromise. I think the $3 million, $6 million thing probably gets done, and the option for the extra year on our side probably is something related to appearances or the goals that he scores between now and the end of the season.
And that's what I was thinking too, is that we can make up the gap there in bonuses. Performance-based bonuses. And that's something that Zlatan is known for accomplishing. He always does it. Mm-hmm. And if he hits whatever the goal is that we give him, then I'm more than happy for us to pay that amount. But I think it's wise to say, hey, we have some reservations given your age, and you know, he was recently injured for United. Obviously, he's been fine ever since, but injuries like that get re-injured, especially at Milan for whatever reason. You look at Conte having his knee blown out 3 times in the 2 seasons he's been with us. So it's crazy, but I do think we could find a middle ground, and I just don't see him wanting to go to Napoli in the situation. You could argue that we're in just as bad, if not worse, of a situation, but we don't have that same type of unrest amongst the ownership, management, and players, you know? Whereas, nice cat, by the way. He's in the background there.
I thought I heard a jump up. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah, we got a nice mascot. Cool. Yeah. Sorry, normally, to everyone who can't see.
Chuck. It's normally Chuck the pup.
I don't think he'd want to go to Napoli right now. He just, knowing that De Laurentiis is kind of going crazy, finding players, months' wages, things like that. It sounds like everyone's on their way out. Alan, Insigne, Callejon, all those players. I don't see him wanting to join a team that's being disassembled right now. I could rather see him join a team that wants to be built up. So I don't know. It's just, it really depends on what he is wanting to do.
The big thing for me about Napoli, and the reason that I keep saying to myself in my heart that it's going to be us, if anyone, is that if he were to join Napoli, and it's always Ancelotti who's the one who's... He came out in the pre-match press conference because Napoli are playing Genk tomorrow in the Champions League. He said, I spoke to him yesterday, sort of teasing the media and saying that, you know, he's speaking to Zlatan, and that's kind of fueling the rumours and stuff like that. But Ancelotti might not even be here after the Genk game. You know, there's rumours that he's going to resign, and there's rumours that he's going to be sacked, if not anyway. And then it's going to be potentially Gattuso, even. I've even seen the idea of their Primavera coach stepping up until the end of the season, and then they'll go for Allegri or something like that. So how, if you're Ibrahimovic, can you commit to 18 months when you don't even know the manager's going to be next week? I feel like that's a strange thing. And you can say the same about us, because we don't know how long Pioli's going to last after this season. But at the same time, I just feel like the emotional attachment there might be enough to kind of win it over for us. But we will see. We'll see. I think by this time next week when we record, we'll know. And I'll either have my Ibrahimovic jersey on or I won't.
Same.
But like I said, don't rule out something stupid like him signing with another MLS team, or, you know, going to China or so. I really don't know. Like, that's the thing. Yeah. So many things could be going on under wraps that we don't know about. And I just don't want to feel too disappointed if it does end up falling apart.
I agree. Honestly, if it got announced that he was going to some Chinese team and getting like $50 million for a year there or whatever, I don't see why he wouldn't take that. Like I said, end of the career, get as much money as you can. A year in China making that kind of money, he would be all for that.
He seems to have this thing as well about conquering as many different places as he can. So it was the whole thing about, you know, going to England when he went to United, and then going to the MLS, and he was like, okay, I conquered. And, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if he went to even somewhere stupid like Germany, because he's not played there. If he went to a Bundesliga team like
Germany, would be the only league that he hasn't, like, of Europe's top five that he hasn't been in, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, I could
Dortmund
see that.
Are apparently the team that are kind of chasing him, but also they don't tend to pay out astronomical wages. So,
yeah.
But they might be worth
I
keeping
don't
an
see
eye
him.
on.
He would only go to Bayern, I think, because, I mean, you're right. Dortmund could do it,
They
and
don't
it's not
need.
like they would struggle, but they don't. Well, neither of the teams need him. But
who do Dortmund have up front?
I don't know. I don't watch. I have no
yeah,
idea.
Yeah, well, at least with Bayern, they've got the best number nine in the world up front, in my opinion.
Yeah, definitely.
Or certainly the most informed this season. You know, I think there's only one start that he hasn't scored in or something like that. But
yeah, crazy.
But yeah, maybe we don't even have a goal scoring problem though, because we went to Bologna and scored three times yesterday.
Right. Yeah.
Nice little segue into that.
We technically scored four times. Once was just a known goal.
yeah. So I actually think that this was probably the most fun game of the season from an entertainment perspective, and from the fact that I felt like we were in control of the game for large portions. Performance-wise, it's probably a toss-up between, you know, Parma, where I think we created more chances and actually limited their opportunities a lot more. Perhaps that was a more dominant, like, whole 90-minute package, but the goal came late and we struggled to put them away. You know, the Napoli game, we looked good. The Juve game, we looked good. But we finally, you know, once again got the result to match this. Christoph Piontek got fouled for a penalty. He got up and stuck that away. Apparently, Kessié let him take it, but Piontek's taken three of the four penalties so far this season, so I feel like he's actually now the penalty taker, but Kessié made it out as if he let him take it. And then Teo Hernandez said, oh, I'll join you on four goals for the season. You're not outscoring me. the next Gareth Bale, yeah, running in behind. Sousa found him with a really, really good pass, and he took a touch, and it was a really nice finish. Then, of course, 2-1, Hernandez' own goal from a corner. We'll come on to Hernandez's mental game in a minute, but I don't feel like there's an awful lot you can do about that. He had to do something, because otherwise it would have been a free header. It's just unfortunate that he went over the top and it bounced that way off him and in. And then 3-1, Bonaventura scored with an absolute cracker again. Another curling shot from just on the edge of the box. And then, of course, they had to make it nervous because Teo Hernandez fouled, I can't remember, Orsolini, I think it was, inside the area and dispatched the penalty. So it was 3-2 in the end. We missed three really good chances on the break as well in the additional 5 minutes. But overall, I think it was really just a matter of time before we started turning those chances into goals. And it finally happened at a team that, you know, as has been pointed out, 1-2-1 at Napoli the week before.
Yeah, you know, this Bologna side is turning into a good squad. But I do want to point out that 2 weeks ago I sat in this very chair and told you and Madison we're taking all 9 points out of the next nine. Well, six of them up and six down, you know, so we're going to take the next three against Sassuolo. But, you know, for now, it was a game I was really confident going into. We absolutely had the shooting boots on, and I got nervous. So just to preface how this went down, yesterday morning, got ready and then turned all my notifications off of my phone from the Milan chat, Twitter, Instagram, all my football apps, and went to this wedding, had a good time, came back home at like 2 o'clock in the morning. Me and some of you listeners might know him, Waleed. He's a big Twitter guy. He's in town for the wedding as well. He's staying with me. And we're like, let's watch the game now, right at 2:30 in the morning. So we start it, and one of my roommates heard the game on, because we had it very loud, you know. We were drinking a little bit. So he comes down, he's like, I heard football. And we're like, well, watch the game with us. We told him we knew nothing. And instead of just, you know, letting us watch the game, he then decided to look up everything that happened. And he says, I'm not going to tell you the score, but you're going to have an emotional roller coaster.
What a terrible thing
to say. So we scored and we're excited. But then instantly we looked at each other like, well, crap, we know they're going to at least get one back. Like, it's going to be tough. So it was interesting. At that moment, I knew that we weren't getting away with a 1-0 win or a 2-0 win or anything like that.
So you're just waiting for the next big thing to happen.
Right. And I never knew when it was coming. It was honestly the worst way to watch a game ever.
Yeah.
But I was really happy with how he looked. You know, I was impressed. I thought the substitutions were a little strange. I'm sure the reasoning behind Bennacer, you and I talked about it before, was to protect him. He's already got five yellow cards and was given a few warnings. So that was, I mean, Ollie, you said that earlier. So if anyone was
trying to come up with that, I was just going to say he's started 8 games for us and got 7 yellow cards now. So I think he's becoming pretty reliable. He's been a ser for getting a yellow card. And did you see the video of Rafael Leao on his Snapchat? They're walking down the train station platform after the game, and he says something in French, which I don't understand, but it was apparently a dig about, you know, all the yellow cards that he's been getting. And he like, gives him a slap over the head, and Bennacer looked genuinely fuming. Like, he did not like getting
pretty hard.
Yeah, I know. I mean, imagine if Leao got injured through that, or Bennacer, like, ripped his knee ligaments doing that, or something.
You know what I've noticed, and it's camaraderie, you know, obviously brotherhood, things like that, that happens with your teammates, but Leao kind of picks on his teammates there and likes to post about it. You know, we saw the ugly Polish to Piontek thing that he did for a while that Piontek clearly was not enjoying. And then we saw this, Bennacer not enjoying. I wonder if there's more, and maybe that's why he's not getting the starts, or it could just be performance as well, which I think it is.
Mm.
But I think it's interesting that he behaves that way. You know, obviously we don't see behind the scenes, but...
Yeah, I think it's a mix of the two. I was surprised to see so many people, because obviously we did an article on it and posted it. I was surprised to see how many people responded to that, not assuming it to be, like you say, the camaraderie, you know, just a bit of banter between teammates. They actually went way over the top with it and said that, well, this is just a clear demonstration of Liao's attitude problem and stuff like that. And I'm thinking, they've just won, you know, a thrilling game of football. The team must have been really down for large parts of this season. Yes, Bennacer didn't look happy with it, but, you know, bottom line is, like, you can't read too much into a video like that at the end of the day, in my opinion. But
yeah, if you've never picked on your friends before, you don't have friends, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I say terrible things to my friends every single day.
You said terrible things to Maddie, and he's not here to hear them at the moment. So.
Yeah, that happens too. Yeah. Love you, Maddie.
So that happened. Teo Hernandez had a bit of a mental game. We got a good question actually from Mitch Silkowski. He said Teo's role is worth a discussion. He does so much in attacks, yet struggles defensively. Should he be converted to a full attacking role, or is he simply benefiting from Pioli's tactics? And that's an interesting point, because I've seen a lot of people suggesting different things, such as him shifting up to becoming a pure left winger, like that question suggests.
Like Gareth Bale.
Gareth Teo. Don't quite work. Or even playing a 3 at the back and using him as a wing back, so he's got a bit more license to get forward and stay forward rather than having to worry about running 100 yards the other way. I've just pointed at my cat there. And it is a point worth discussing, because I think, particularly in this game, even though he's kind of got away with it over the last 3-4 games, particularly in this game, I think you sort of see that he can be a bit of a liability defensively. Obviously, the own goal is a set piece that I think we defended badly. It was just whipped into the near post, and his man was free, so we either tried to make a play for the ball or we concede anyway. But the penalty was really, really bad judgment. And on another day, against perhaps an opponent that had a bit more momentum up until that point, maybe that gets them back into the game and they steal a point from us, you know? So I think there definitely needs to be some discussion about what we do moving forward, because, as I say, against better teams, we are going to be punished.
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned all those things, and another thing that I saw, I believe it was seconds before the first goal, Teo actually had a handball in the box. It should have been a penalty, but immediately thereafter they scored, so it was kind of a non-issue there. But, I mean, it's just another lapse of judgment thing, because that's one of those fouls that it's easy to not commit, you know. And he did it, and he got away with it because they still scored, so it didn't matter. But yeah, you know, I've seen people put him in their like team of the week and stuff like that, and while I appreciate our players obviously getting recognition, I thought that was a weird choice, because like you said, he had a good game in the sense that he scored, but he had a poor game in the sense that he also scored an own goal and then gave away a penalty.
You could argue he comes out of this game -1.
Really. I agree. Yeah, I mean, one up, two down. Yeah, so it's an interesting situation. And you know, jokes aside with the Gareth Bale comparisons, there is a similar career path 100%. That they're going on as far as how they played, where they started their positioning. Now, do I think Teo's going to turn into a Gareth Bale type of player if we do switch him to left wing? Probably not. That'd be fantastic. But I don't know. I mean, for now, I think we keep him where he's at. If Maldini sees another left back that he likes, I don't have a problem with Teo converting to a left winger in place of Calhanoglu, because we do need a left wing still. And if we're going to splash our January transfer budget on wages for Zlatan and either the midfielder that we've been promised for years or, you know, the backup center back that we've also been promised, then I don't think that's crazy to say, Ricardo Rodriguez, let's give you your spot back, who we at least know is better than Teo defensively. And we could try Teo left wing. And if it doesn't work, then we just switch it back to how it is, you know? Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong with experimenting a little bit. Obviously, we are in a dire position in the table, and we can't really risk those type of experiments right now. Mm. But in the future, it's something worth trying, I think.
I think it's probably been tried in training, without a doubt. Mm-hmm. I also think that, you know, I mentioned this in the chat that we have earlier, but there needs to be an acknowledgement of what is the surprise factor, that teams are not used to a left back pushing up that much and penning them in that much, you know, down their right side, obviously our left side. So perhaps, you know, you need to understand it. I mean, the question puts it brilliantly. I think he's benefiting in a way from Pioli's philosophy. You know, we talked about it multiple times, how when we're going forward, we essentially shift to playing with three at the back. That allows Teo to get forward, allows Calhanoglu to tuck in, and, you know, Suso to also kind of tuck in and play. And you've seen that perfectly with the second goal. We just waited. Teo timed his run perfectly. Suso played a lovely ball in behind. That's the kind of thing that we expect to see from him week in, week out. And they were just caught completely off guard because they're probably not used to fullbacks, you know, that are attempting to get through one-on-one. So, yeah, benefiting from the surprise factor a little bit, but it also has its drawbacks, you know, in that sense. I think to call him defensively irresponsible would probably be accurate, and that would be quite a nice way of putting it. But I think from a positional sense, and this is what Ricardo Rodriguez always got hammered for, his, you know, positioning is not good, and he does make rash decisions, as you say, with the own goal. It went in off his arm, so if it hadn't gone in, it'd have been handball anyway, and he was also all over the back of the guy, so it's probably a double penalty as well. And then the actual penalty that he gave away was just a shocking lapse of judgment. Why he's gone into Alcelini from behind there, I've no idea. Game management needs to be better. Unfortunately, because of the two goals that come as a result of him, it's made it a difficult and more nervy 3 points than it should have been. You know, perhaps if he makes only one of those lapses in judgment, we go on and win 4-1, 5-1, something like that. And everyone's talking about, wow, we've got this serious momentum now going into the games before Christmas. But is what it is. It's difficult, obviously, because he's been one of, if not our best, for me, up there with Bennacer, has been our best signing of the six that we made in the summer. So as a result, feel like you can't really criticize him too much, especially, you know, when you pay 20 million euros, there's not an abundance of world-class left-backs out there, but it feels like at the moment we've got someone who's at least a difference maker, and we couldn't say that about Rodriguez. We'll see.
Another benefit to having Teo Hernandez down there defensively is even when he's beaten, you know, gets dribbled past or a poor pass, however it is, and the defender or the attacker gets behind him, he's fast enough to catch up and at least try to correct his wrong, you know. Whereas when Ricardo Rodriguez would get beat, that was it. They were in on goal. Teo at least still gives us that little bit of hope that, okay, maybe we could get back here, get a nice sliding challenge or something like that, or just fluster them to where they mess up a pass, something. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it happens every now and then, not all the time, but that's one thing that we're not going to get with Ricardo Rodriguez at all. So, I think we just keep him where he's at. And like you said last week, just don't fix what's not broken.
Mm-hmm. And we will know if it does become broken, and he, you know, week in, week out, he's looking like costing us more chances and more goals than he's going to create us or going to score for us. But interestingly, I think Rodriguez is gone in January, to be honest. And obviously all the talk has been about Levin Kurzawa from PSG being his replacement. And that, to me, you're then looking at a situation where if you ever did look at moving Hernandez up to left wing, you've got a guy at fullback there who wouldn't be, you know, he defensively for me wouldn't really be too much of an upgrade. I haven't watched Kurzawa in, you know, week in, week out or anything like that, but I get the impression that he's not the strongest defensive fullback, and also he plays for PSG and he played for that really good Monaco team, so he's not used to being penned in and having to be part of a compact tight back four when you're having to defend and stuff like that. So I would worry about how that would work moving forward. But the left side's all right for now, I think, especially with, you know, Bonaventura in that left side of midfield. He had another really, really good game, another goal. It's 2 in 3 for him now. Similar one as well, just picking the ball up when he did. And he didn't go on the run as such before, but he picked up a loose ball and curled it in. And again, his celebration shows how much it meant to him. Another outpouring of emotion. We've said this could be our leader. This could be our guy. If he keeps putting in 7 out of 10 performances, he is going to be like a new signing.
Yeah, and he has so far since his return to the game. I mean, how many appearances has he had? 8 now? Something like that?
He returned from injury. He played in Gianpaolo's last game in charge. And he started in the 2-1 win away at Genoa. And then since Pioli came in, he had that muscle problem. And then he came back. I think he might have had 6 appearances for us this season. Let me look it up.
Something like that. But regardless, I mean, he's got 3 goals in the 6 or 7 appearances that he's made this season. He's obviously up
to
the
level. Oh, it's 8. 2 goals in 8 appearances.
2 goals in 8 appearances. Okay. I mean, nothing, not crazy numbers, but this is also a midfielder who's back from a very long injury. And he's really transformed it for us. We're getting that creativity that Paqueta was giving us, but he's also giving us the accuracy that we weren't getting, the decision-making skills that we weren't getting. So he brings a lot more to the table than what we could offer prior. And it just shows, you know, between that midfield that I think would be our best case would be Bonaventura, Benacer, and Krunic. That is what I'd like to see moving forward, because Kessie still makes poor decisions. I will give him props, because I didn't see him making any wild shots yesterday. He actually passed him back when he was in the box, and I don't think I've ever seen him do that ever. So that was fantastic. But yeah, Bonaventura is a big improvement. You're right. He's almost like a new signing right now. How long was he out? 1.5 years?
His last game before he came back against Genoa was October 2018.
Okay, so almost an entire year.
I think it was against Lazio when he got injured, and then Caldara got his cruciate ligament done in a game against Lazio in the Coppa. So it's like every time we play Lazio, we're cursed. But his deal runs out at the end of the season, and there's rumours that Fiorentina, Napoli and Roma are sniffing around. There was a report today from Gazzetta dello Sport, I think it was, saying that Raiola had offered him to Napoli and Roma if they can't find an agreement on a renewal. He wants to discuss it in January. Milan want to hang on until the spring, which I assume means like March time, you know, February, March time. Personally, I am worried that if we don't make a decision either way on his future, then there are going to be teams that are going to want to take a chance on him. And Raiola's not going to be the kind of guy who's going to accept someone who's been a loyal servant to this club, who the club have stood by through the injury, don't get me wrong, but he's also, you know, worked incredibly hard to get back to where he is. He's putting in the performances. You know, there doesn't seem to be that much rust about him at all. Raiola's not going to be bullied by Milan on these negotiations. So I'd be starting them talks as soon as possible and just maybe give him another 2 years until he's 32.
Yeah, you know, I definitely would like a renewal. One of the things I said when he was injured, because there were rumors of renewal talks then, was that you don't want to renew a player who's at his age and injured. You know, you want to see how they come back, how they perform, and then talk about it. And we've now seen how he's come back and performed, and it's been exactly what we wanted, if not more. So I'm all for a renewal right now. If they want to wait till the spring, I understand that, but I do think it would be wise in January to just get it done. Maybe not immediately in. I think the transfer market's going to be the most important part, obviously, but before the end of the window, I would imagine we renew him, honestly.
Yeah, me too. And I think he's the kind of player, as mentioned, a loyal servant to the club in his time so far. I mean, he joined back in 2014. I saw something before we played Parma. You remember when we beat him 5-4 and Menez scored that back heel and stuff?
Oh,
Bonaventura is the only player left from that squad who went to play Parma in, you know, the weekend before last. So, yeah, I think he would want to renew with us, and we should, you know, reward him if his form continues. You don't know what's going to happen between now and January. I wouldn't sit down until January. Who knows? He could re-aggravate his knee injury. He could completely lose form. We don't know what's going to happen. But at the same time, if we get to January and he's got 6 months left on his deal, I would be worried about other teams that are wanting to take a chance and are sniffing around, especially someone like Napoli and Roma, who could be top six, top four rivals come the end of the season. So, yeah.
You mentioned something there that I want to circle back to Zlatan about, but you mentioned how Bonaventura is the only player left from that squad that played against Parma. There is not a single person in the club, player or otherwise, that is still here that was around when Zlatan was. So that emotional honeymoon thing might not even be real. You know, that might be more fan creation than reality, because obviously he knows some of the players, but they're not boys, you know? It's not like they're a Bate.
I think Daniele Boniera is a first team coach now, isn't he?
Boniera, you're right. That's the one. That's the guy.
Yeah.
That's the one, dude. Agent Boniera, he's making it happen.
What a bloke. What a bloke.
But yeah, well, never mind. Ignore that whole point.
No, I see exactly what you mean. Obviously, if he's the only person that he can walk into the training room and training pitch, sorry, and he's the only one that he remembers from his time there, then yeah, you're right. It's not so much a reunion, but in everything else, it is. I think so much of this comes down to his love for the city. He just wants the lifestyle back. Like, he's 38, he's had his experiences and stuff like that. If he joins us, it'll be because he loves the club and because he loves living in Milano. So,
what are the odds he goes to Inter to win the Champions League one last time? Try and make it happen.
He's never won it, has he?
No, he's never had it. He won Europa League.
No, I don't think. I hope not, because I've heard Inter are in the market for a striker, but I think he kind of burned his bridges there when he came to us, to be honest. But
yeah,
I don't know, because apparently they're after Giroud, and I think if you're really looking for a stopgap striker, then Ibrahimovic has got to be a better choice than Giroud. But it depends what kind of profile they're after, I suppose. And,
yeah. But they've also proven that they're willing to splash some big money on players right now.
Well, it's annoying because you keep seeing them linked with players like Rakitic, players like Arturo Vidal, players I think would make a massive difference to us, and we should be in there trying to sign, but we're not. And ultimately, you know, you can believe what you want from the papers. I've seen some of the papers say today that they don't actually have that much money for January, and Barcelona are trying to get Lautaro Martinez from them, and you know, they might get Rakitic or Vidal in exchange for that. There's all kinds of stuff floating around, as you'd expect with the transfer window opening next month, but annoyingly they're like in a Scudetto challenge. I'm willing to accept it now. I really don't think that they're just going to fall off. I think Conte is having the desired effect there. You know, if they get a result against Barcelona tomorrow, they're into the knockouts of the Champions League. Would be great if they were to somehow drop into the Europa League, because I think that might screw them up a little bit. Unless they bombed out in the first knockout round of the Europa League, then, you know, for me, they can go on and win the Europa League as long as it messes up their Scudetto hopes. You know,
right, yeah. I mean, worst case would be them being able to win the Scudetto. You know, they're obviously real contenders. They're in first now. Then props to them. They deserve to be there. But, that's the last thing I want.
Yeah, I know. I genuinely would rather Juve, you know, pad their lead over us too than, I mean,
I'd rather Juve get 4 stars on their crest than Inter get one more Scudetto over us.
Me too. Even though they won one of their Scudettos illegitimately, so in theory they don't want to 18. But yeah, we mentioned the midfield.
We had one robbed from us, so.
Exactly, so it's actually 20-17. No, 19-17.
19-17.
Mentioned the midfield briefly there. We'll round off the Parma game after this, but we got a good question from the Milan Duck. That is a fantastic name for an account. I must say. Pioli seems to prefer Kessier as a starter to Krunic, despite the Bosnians' very solid recent performances. What do you guys think? So it kind of baffled me that he started Kessier again, because for me, Krunic seems to be offering so much more at the moment, and he seems to be the more confident of the two. So why you want to break a player's streak of confidence, I have no idea. But obviously, he played Kessier in the game at Parma. It was an average performance, actually. It was probably a below average performance. It was like a 5 out of 10, something like that. And then this game wasn't particularly great either, to be honest. Didn't notice him as much. And as you alluded to earlier, I think that might be a good thing because he wasn't blazing shots over the bar and we weren't shouting off for say Kessie and all that kind of stuff. But also didn't notice him getting stuck in as much. You know, he normally tries to be the powerhouse of the midfield, and I think that Bennacer has very much taken over that kind of role. I'm in agreement with you about what the ideal midfield should be, in that it should be Bennacer is the regista, and then, you know, Krunic is the right-sided central midfielder, Bonaventure is the left-sided central midfielder. But where does that leave Paqueta, and where does that leave Kessié? Would you sell one of them in January if we got a good offer?
I could see Kessié leaving in January. I think our strategy is kind of going to need, if we want to successfully execute whatever it is, we're going to need to get rid of some players that have done good work for us that we could get a decent amount of money for. And I think both Paqueta and Kessié are those type of players. But because Paqueta was brought in brought in last January, I just don't see Elliot saying, okay, let's get rid of him. You know, they're not about losing money. They want to recoup some. And they lost no money on Kessié because it wasn't their money that bought. Well, actually, it technically was their money that bought them. It was a loan.
It's balance sheets, yeah.
Yeah. But as far as like the term sheets for right now goes, it's all profit for Elliot. So I could see him leaving, and maybe that's why we're getting some performances out of him right now, you know, because you're right. Krunic is absolutely the guy who deserves to start. But we're also seeing Kessié change the way he's playing. He's playing more in the role that we want out of him as opposed to the role that he likes to play. So maybe it's something that Pioli's done in training. He said, look, this is how you have to play if you want a spot on this team. And so he's showing him that he could do that. He's changing it up. Or it's simply get out there, get a few good performances because the plan is to, offload him in January and we want to raise your value as much as we possibly can.
Yeah.
I mean, there's only two more. Exactly. There's two more games until the window opens, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if he makes an appearance in both of those, either as a starter or a substitute, but I definitely think he's in the window.
And the rumor is that there's teams that are sniffing around as well. You know, Wolves keep being linked in the Premier League. Monaco keep being linked from Liga. And then there's even Napoli who've been linked recently. Now, I kind of like the idea of us doing some kind of deal with Napoli.
Would you want
idea. Possibly. I don't know how that would impact Bennacer because he tends to play as like a deep line midfielder as well.
Right.
But I mean, if we could go and get a winger from them, or if we could even somehow swindle it and get like a Mertens from them, or so, because these are players like Callejon and Mertens have apparently been told they don't have a future at the club anymore.
Right.
So if De Laurenti, I never say his name, you know, the Napoli president, if he says, look, that's it, you don't have a future here anymore, and we're offering up, you know, someone like Kessié, and they give us Mertens plus cash, because obviously he's older and he's, you know, his market value is not quite as high, then I think that's probably something that we pull the trigger on. Also, that the problem with Kessié is that I also don't think he wants to leave. I actually genuinely think he wants to stick out. You know, he apparently refused Wolves in the he refused an exit point blank in the summer because he wanted to stay and prove his worth. I like that attitude, I really do. But then when the thing came out before Juventus about him not being good in training and the way that was all handled by the club, I found that a bit strange, as if he'd kind of cut his ties already. So we'll see what happens. I think that's going to be quite an interesting one because, you know, A, it's going to be, will he stay or will he go? And then B, it's going to be, how much do we get for him? Is someone going to be willing to take that gamble and pay 30 mil because he's only 22 years old and he has shown promising signs? Or do we just cut our losses and get 20 mil? Is he in a swap deal? That's definitely one to watch. And I wouldn't mind someone like Rakitic coming in and filling his spot in the roster, you know, as a depth option. And you maybe still have Krunic then as a depth option. And I still want to see Paqueta moved up to left wing, but that's probably a rant for another episode. Kind of find it weird, though, that he's not finding too much space at the moment. Came back from injury, wasn't put into the starting lineup. I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen with him. I've got a weird, weird feeling about Paqueta. I think it might be the end of the season or something like that, and we sell to the highest bidder. It's just not really, it's not clicked like we all expected it to. You know, he's not the hyped kid that we all were really, really desperate to see anymore. It was more like, oh, Paqueta's coming on with 12 minutes to go, And we actually thought that was kind of a strange substitution at the time as well. So I don't know what's going to happen with him.
Yeah, you know, when Paqueta came in, his first few appearances for us under Gattuso were incredible. You know, he changed the game, him and Piontek, and we really thought, like, this was the duo that was going to lead us to the promised land. Obviously, he then had that, like, 6 or 7 game suspension, something crazy, that ended the season for him for the most part. And then under Gianpaolo, it just seemed like things really changed with the comment about being too Brazilian. And since then, it's almost seemed like he doesn't want to be there. Even though Gianpaolo is gone now, he doesn't have that same flair or desire that we saw out of him. And, you know, realistically, there were a lot of those young Brazilian players that were extremely hyped up. Paqueta was one of them, but he also was one that was hyped up the least amount out of all the Brazilians. It was Vinicius Jr. who went to Madrid. It was Paqueta, and of course I'm spacing, but there was a third one.
Yeah.
Who was it? Do you remember who I'm talking about?
I remember Gabigol being really, really hyped up, but he ended up being a bust.
Yeah, but regardless, I mean, one of the other clubs could have taken him for the money we spent on him, and it would not have been hard for them to convince Paqueta to join, you know, a Real Madrid, a Barcelona, things like that. So the fact that we're the ones that got him is more of a statement of them saying, you know, we'll let you guys have this one, I think, than us showing, like, flexing real buying power.
Having Leonardo helped, I suppose, as well. That's why I'm not surprised that PSG are apparently interested in signing him. I think they're the kind of team that would throw some money at him, and he might actually thrive in a team like that that dominates games and can afford to have a bit of a luxury player. You know, he's not as lightweight as I think he's perceived to be, and I will praise him for the things that he does really well, which is taking the ball through the thirds for us. I think he's a good dribbler, but I just think decision-making-wise, like I say, it just hasn't clicked. The chemistry's not quite 100% being there. And you see a game like, you know, the Parma game, you see a game like the Bologna game, where we haven't got him in the team, and all of a sudden our passing triangles look really good. Our one-touch looks really good. You know, we're holding on to the ball much better. Suso's playing incredible threaded passes like that. I just wonder if it's a coincidence or whether it's a, you know, there will be games to use Paqueta and when to start him. You might say that this coming Sunday is one when we play Sassuolo at home and you expect us to dominate large periods of the game, and you can perhaps afford to have a player like him in there to just try and get into a groove. But I don't know, it comes down to Pioli. He's not in the mood for carrying any passengers. And I'm not saying that Paqueta is a passenger at all, but he's going to put out an 11 that he thinks is going to give us the best chance of winning the game and doing it the way that he wants to do it. So,
and another thing we got to think about with our midfield is if Zlatan is an addition, we all know he improves every player around him. We saw it when Nocerino turned world-class that season. Can he make Paqueta incredible? Can he make Kessié look incredible? Do we still sacrifice them? I mean, I think Kessié has a profile that would match up with him. If he relinquishes all a right to shoot and just pass the ball to Zlatan, he's got the muscle to make that happen almost every single time he gets the ball, I think. And Paqueta has the flair. If his decision-making's there and knows to just find Zlatan with the ball, I think that's buckets there as well. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. And a lot of it does kind of hinge on Zlatan. It sounds like, at least to me personally, that's the transfer strategy, is get Zlatan, worry about anything else later, and then we go from there. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what happens, but that seems to be what the club wants to do, is everything's I don't know right now.
Yeah, Piontek seems to think he's going to be playing alongside Ibrahimovic, which I think is quite funny.
That was
a bold comment from him. Scores a penalty and thinks he's prime Ronaldo again. But do you know what? I don't think he was brilliant by any means, but I think it was a 6 out of 10 performance from Piontek. Obviously, he got the goal from the penalty spot. Didn't really have much else cracking, really, but I thought his hold-up play was better than it has been. You know, we've been seeing 4 out of 10 performances from him for weeks now, but he's ended the goals drought. He put in a good performance. I thought his hold-up play and all that was pretty good. Not sold on it at all, you know, I don't think by any means. He's back in last season's form. But it makes
you
wonder.
But you're right, he looked a lot better.
It makes you wonder what happens, though. You know, if Ibra does come in, does Piontek just get cast to one side, or do they try and fit them both in together? You know, do they try to play Leal for the flick-ons and stuff like that? It's all interesting tactical points, I suppose. Sassuolo on Sunday. I'm gonna have to do. I'm never really prepared for these, to be honest. But I know that Sassuolo aren't having an amazing season. They've had a couple of impressive results. I'm looking up the table. Of course, it's lagging.
Are you trying to find their position?
Sassuolo at the moment are 14th, yeah.
Yeah.
So they're 5 points behind us. They've won 4, lost 7, drawn 3. But yeah, only 5 points behind us, I guess. They've still basically got that similar group of players, really. You know, the likes of Berardi, Alfred Duncan, De Frel. Yep. And they've got that Jeremy Boga, who's a really, really good player. I like him. Got Pedro Obiang, who was at West Ham. Filip Juricic. They've got actually Vlad Chiriches, who I think was at Spurs.
He was, yeah, the Napoli for a little bit.
So they've got some names there, some recognisable names. Everyone seems to think back to Sassuolo for Milan anyways, being that opponent that we could never beat. Away from home, we really struggled against them, but they seemed to be our bogey side for a while, especially when they went on that run and got into the Europa League. But things have kind of changed. They seem to have, I won't say lost their momentum or whatever, but they now seem to have middled out and finally found that plateau of being sort of a mid-lower table Serie A side. And with all respect to them, they're probably going to turn us over now, but these are the kind of games that we need to be winning if we're serious about getting a top six slash a top four finish. By the way, I will just point out at this point, everyone's saying about getting back into the Europa League places. The gap to sixth at the moment is 8 points. The gap to fourth at the moment is 9 points. So if we can get one, we can definitely get the other. You know, yeah. I don't think top four is actually a write-off anymore, but game by game, as Pioli says. But yeah, we've got to be winning this on Sunday.
Absolutely, and I think we will. You know, you mentioned our head-to-head against them was very poor when they first came into Serie A and became a staple. You know, they were always our bogey team. But you're right, that isn't the case anymore, and I don't think people are fully aware of that yet. You know, but if you look at the last six games between the two of them, we've won 5 of them, and the other one that wasn't a win was a 1-1 draw. So, I mean, we're definitely the better team now, and you look at where they're at, even with all the turmoil we've been in lately, they're in worse. You know, you look at the surrounding of this specific game. It's at home. This is our 120-year anniversary celebration, potentially the unveiling of Ibrahimovic. Wow, I stumbled all over his name there. But just think about it. I mean, Ibra gets announced. We got a packed stadium for the celebration pregame. We go into this game. There's no way we could lose. The momentum, the hype, everything's going to be crazy. I've said it for 3 weeks now, but I'm going to keep saying it. We win this one. I could honestly see a 4-1, even 3-1. Unfortunately, I don't see a clean sheet in our future anytime soon, but I think this is the game where we're going to have a confident win, like what last week could have been, like you said, where we could have won 4 or 5-1 had Teo not made so many mistakes. This is the week. 4-1 win, 3-1 win, it's happening.
I really admire your confidence there. I've just stumbled across a statistic here. The last time Milan won 2 away games in a row was November 2012.
Yeah.
That is absolutely mental. Now, that's, I think, wild. What that means is not us winning, you know, 2 away games, but like we played an away game and an away game, not a home game in between. But still, that is crazy.
Yeah, that is.
Good start. Yeah, I think you're right. Everything points towards this being a good party, basically. You know, it's going to be a good day regardless because there's going to be a lot of club legends in attendance from what we understand. I assume the Curvasud will do a really good tifo for the game. And as you say, there is the potential dramatic unveiling of Ibra. There's rumours he might even rock up to the event that they're doing on our actual birthday, which is
the 15th.
The 13th, I think. There's some dispute about
whether it's
the 12th. I can't remember, the 12th or the 15th. But yeah, we were founded on the 12th of December, and obviously the 15th is our closest home game to it, so that's what they're doing. But I think on the actual 12th, they're having another like official club event. So there's rumours that he might even rock up to that, but you know, we'll wait and see on that. It's all speculation at this point, but should be good. I think this will be a good test for us, because from what I have seen of Sassuolo, they've actually, I think they've hammered a couple of teams this season, and they tend to be pretty good on the counter-attack. And De Zerbi was one of the managers that we were linked with over the summer, because he's kind of revered for the way that he likes to play. We're going to try and dominate this game. Of course we are, but we've shown already that we're susceptible to the counter-attack. We saw it in that game against Lazio at home when we got sucker punched late on going for the winner. Again, every single home game that we have that we're expected to win, I say this, but if we get an early goal, it just settles everything down, and you know, we can try and dictate and we can try and dominate that way. But
when did we get the goal in the game yesterday? Because it was fairly early, correct? The first goal?
Yeah.
Was the 15th minute was the penalty.
And then it was the 30th, roughly.
Yeah, it's 15th, 32nd, and 46th were our goals. And 40th and 84th were theirs.
Mm-hmm. So, the early goal certainly helped in that. With the Parma game, you felt that we were nervous, but we were the ones who were going to score, if anyone. So we need to be on the front foot in this one, without a doubt. And it'd be interesting to see if he does make any changes to the starting lineup in light of it being a game that we should be looking to win. But no, I admire the confidence behind the prediction. I'll echo it. I think that Sassuolo... Hang on, let me just quickly look before I make a statement that's probably completely wrong. But I think that Sassuolo's defensive record this season is actually pretty bad, so I could see us scoring three again. Yeah, they've conceded 27 goals, which is the third most in the division. But they've scored 26, so I don't see us keeping a clean sheet either. I think Bogor will score for them. He's a quality player. He was on loan at Birmingham, which is obviously a team that I saw Huddersfield play time and time again. And... let's go with 3-1 as well, then. I'll go with 3-1. I think Piontek scores a goal from open play as well.
And really?
Wow. Yeah, I do.
I hope so.
Clock's right twice a day, you know?
Yeah.
Right, we'll end with a couple of questions then. So, Christian Espinoza asks, this is a good question as well, I must say, because it's something that I've actually been thinking about as like the basis of a feature. Just making up numbers, like say Milan do end up with Zlatan in January and they have a budget of 40 million to improve the team in other areas. Would you rather use it all on one good player like Rakitic or Tonali, or try get two or three lower end sort of depth options?
No, that's a great question, actually. And it's one that I think you and I personally go back and forth on all the time when we're just kind of throwing BS to the wind in our group chat. But I think... given our current situation, and something I've kind of agreed with for a while, we should just go for one big player. Where we're at now, we already have the baseline. We have a foundation. It seemed like the summer window, we signed what appeared to be a lot of backup players. Obviously, Teo became a starter. Krunic has earned that spot as well. Leao is in contention. But I think now we just need to get two of those solidified strong players. It sounds like Ibra's the first one, and then a midfielder or a center back, whether it's 40 million, 30 million, whatever our budget is. I do think it's wise to splash it all, because again, in January, you don't want to do a complete reinvention of your entire squad. You know, a few additions here and there that are going to make a big difference, that's what you do in January, and that's mm-hmm. what we have the ability to do with 40 million for one big player. I think that's the way to go.
Yeah, I think my short answer to this question is definitely go for that one player, in particular central midfielder for me, that's going to occupy that right central midfield spot and, you know, be an instant upgrade on anything that we have, with all respect to Krunic and to Paqueta. But the long answer to this is that I guess there's going to be more movement, and, you know, it's like, okay, we have a 40 mil budget, but Kessié might leave, so we can free the space to bring in a midfielder, and that might be 30 mil that we can spend on another player, and we've still got that 40 mil budget. So I don't know what's going to happen. I think I've got my gut feeling is that we're going for Ibrahimovic regardless. If we don't get him, I think we're going to go in for another striker. I think that's been made abundantly clear. I think we're going to be in for a midfielder. The rumour is constantly Rakitic. We keep seeing stuff about Torreira, but I think, you know, Bennacer, that's his role now. And it would be a bit insulting to go out and spend 35 mil or something on Torreira and have them to compete. And then we'll see what happens at centre-back, because Duarte is obviously injured for up to 4 months. You know, they reckon that he's got then another month when he's in training that he's going to need to get back up to speed. So we could look at him being out until near the end of the season, essentially, which is a massive shame because he was just starting to get a run of games. But obviously Vito told us, we had an exclusive on the site, that we're in talks over a deal for Mary Demiral, and came out today that apparently this came from Bleacher Report. His asking price is 30 mil. So it's closer to where I'd want to pay than the 40 mil that was originally quoted. And it makes you wonder that, it makes you wonder if he tries to force a move. I feel like we've mentioned this before, definitely. Yeah. But if he tries to force a move, we could be looking at something 2025 or even a loan with an option to buy at 30 mil, which is good because you can roll it over then onto the summer in terms of expenditure. So I think, yeah, a player in each position, to be honest. I think we'll go for a centre-back. I think we'll go for a box-to-box midfielder. I think we'll go for a striker. And I kind of want to end this on with a positive question, but also a controversial one at the same time. It comes from Stephen Ghibellini. He says, can we finally give credit to Musacho and Calhanoglu for their contributions to the team, even though they're not the shining light in every game?
Yeah, you know, I think they've been victims of criticism for quite some time. Musacchio is a guy that I week in and week out bash. Calhanoglu, on the other hand, is someone that I praised for a while. He was even having bad performances when the season started, but he also was the sole reason for our first like 3 or 4 goals. Mm-hmm. I remember he won a penalty, he scored the first two, and he got an assist on the other, something like that. So he definitely was doing more than people were giving him credit for. The problem was his passing wasn't too hot. His corners were poor. His free kicks haven't been great since arriving here. He's got a lot of downsides that should be highlighted. You know, no player is free from criticism when it's necessary, but there is a lot of unnecessary hate thrown his way. And absolutely, to the question's point, he deserves more praise. Musacchio, though, on the other hand, he's not getting any from me. Sorry.
I thought that's the way that you go. I'm kind of the other way. I think Musacchio, for the good performances that he's had, and he had a really, really good one at Parma, in my opinion, and he was certainly adequate in the game at Bologna. I don't think he was at fault for either of the goals. And Romagnoli actually had a very good game as well, in my opinion. But Musacchio he's gotten a lot of stick. It's always the way that it is with centre-backs, that their mistakes get highlighted more than the, you know, the headers that they win, the last-ditch tackles that they make and stuff like that. That's natural. It's par for the course. But you got to remember that Musacchio was such a big part of that side that was successful on that run last season when, seem to mention it every week, but we went on that run at the start of 2019 of being the best defense in Europe. I think we let in like 3 goals in the first 7 or 8 games of 2019. And that back four under Gattuso was Calabria, Musacchio, Romagnoli and Rodriguez. It's kind of amazing how he worked wonders with that back four, and he got them playing well as a unit, got them playing a good line. You know, the midfield was also very organized. And Musacchio, he was a big part of that. And there's a reason I think that he was up there in terms of the who scored ratings for overall last season. Yeah, do you know what? This season, I won't lie, everyone's kind of looked bad, especially under Gianpaolo. But he in particular looked a bit all over the place, without a doubt. I'm hoping now he can start to return to some form. And I think he's got his starting spot until, you know, at least January because of Duarte's injury, which is a shame. Caldara is not going to be fit until the new year, we don't think. So we'll see when he gets back into the fold whether he's going to be instantly challenging for that starting spot, but that'd be interesting. Calhanoglu, I think I've made my feelings clear on him before. I just don't see the merit of playing him out there on the left. You know, there are people who say, look at the key passes that he plays and look at the, you know, it just seems like every time I see him, he does things wrong. Yes, naturally, I think because of the role that he plays and the position that he plays and the type of player he is, he is going to come up on the score sheet and he is going to get more assists than other players because he's kind of given the freedom out there on that left side. But I just feel like we'd look like such a better team if we had a more well-rounded left winger, particularly one that was maybe right-footed and was able to cut inside. Calhanoglu might be right-footed, actually.
He is, yeah.
Yeah, but point stands, you know, if it was like a Paqueta or something like that, I'd still like to see him tried there. Just give him one last throw of the dice to see if we can finally unlock this guy. But no, it's a good question. I'm up for giving any player credit that helps contribute to team wins, you know, whether that be through a 6 out of 10 performance. Every player misplaces passes. Every player makes wrong decisions. Just seems like those two have been highlighted in particular as weak links, sometimes fairly, sometimes unfairly. And with that, we will might as well end it. Done well, an hour and 10, considering... we've not had Maddie's rambling, but he normally adds about 10 minutes anyway. But I'm sure I'll be back for next week anyway. In the meantime, though, thank you for listening, everyone. I've been your host, Ollie Fisher. You can find me on Twitter at Ollie Fisher or at Kilpin Chronicle for some more explicit Milan-based rants. Been joined by Anthony Torgrude, who can now go to bed.
I haven't slept much, but absolutely. You can find me on Twitter at Torgrude45. Follow me there, follow us, and... hopefully we'll see you guys all again next week. Obviously, well, never mind. I was going to say watch it on YouTube, but if you're watching this and you already know that, so never mind.
Yes, thank you very much for listening, everyone. We'll catch you in a week's time.
Abate la rimette dentro. Esce Radu. Porta vuota. Gol! Gol! Abbiamo battuto il gatto nero! Li abbiamo battuti tutti, Alessio! Grande Alessio! È bella la vita! Lava quella zolla, Alessio! Lava la quella zolla, Alessio! Lava!